These are the Target Files. Journey back with us between the 1970s and 1990s on a TARDIS nostalgia trip as we look back at the novelizations and audiobook releases of classic Doctor Who stories.
Gallifreyan Archive. Subject: Time Lord known as the Doctor. Third incarnation. Subtitle: Target Novelization. Doctor Who and the Dinosaur Invasion. Author: Malcolm Hulk.
The Doctor and Sarah arrive back in London to find it completely deserted, except for the dinosaurs. Has the return of these prehistoric creatures been deliberately planned? And if so, who could be behind it all?
Hello, this is Mike. Welcome to the Target Files.
Hello, this is Alex.
Okay, this week we are discussing Doctor Who and the Dinosaur Invasion, novelisation by the television script writer Malcolm Hulk, and the audiobook release read by Martin Jarvis. Al, your initial thoughts on this book, and we'll discuss the audiobook later.
Good all-paced action story book, but again, I didn't find the monsters that scary, to be honest. So there are some good bits with the dinosaurs, but it's the whole sort of theory of what happens when London sort of gets emptied what made me most sort of interested, and how sort of breaking it down could be quite scary, and how the whole areas are taken over by dinosaurs and people are sort of taken out of London. So I thought it was a really good story. It did have good pace and had good bits in it.
Yeah, I enjoyed it overall. You weren't really sure about the monsters. There's a bit of a question mark. Who are the monsters in this book? Called Invasion of the Dinosaurs. But as you go through the story, there's a little bit more to it than that.
Yeah, there's sort of forms to persuade people to do stuff. And they're not really the monsters. It's the people behind them, really.
Elements in this story of things that we've seen in Doctor Who since, like a time scoop. And we also saw it in Torchwood, the first series. Certain characters from history placed out of their time.
Yeah, definitely. I think that worked really well in this book when you meet the Roman and he's out completely out of his time and history and thinks sort of Sarah's a witch. It's quite fun, that bit. But definitely that whole bit in Torchwood is great, that season, to do with sort of out of time and time scoops. But I definitely think the dinosaurs are an add-on, really, in this episode. They're not, though it's called the Dinosaur Invasion, it's not really about them. It's about the characters behind it.
As you sort of briefly touched on at the beginning introduction, the idea of a empty London is very dystopian written, isn't it? It's very sort of chilling, really, and eerie.
Most definitely. That's sort of what really gets you into the story, that bit at the beginning with the Scottish people have come down for what's the cup final, and they end up in houses that are just derelict, and you think London's never like that.
Yes, and it says Shugie McPherson is the character's name, isn't he? A great name.
Yeah.
He's come down for the cup final, and he wakes up one morning to find the other Scotsmen he's come down with, the other visitors, are all desperate to leave because London's being abandoned. And he ends up staying there on his own, doesn't he? A bit of laziness, and then you get this whole story of him staying in the house and going to the house next door, finding some booze I think it says he has enough, is it cider or whiskey bottles for 4 days?
Whiskey for 4 days and drinks them all. And you think, how could you do that in 4 days? He must be completely bored and depressed thinking about it. And then waking up and thinking, he finds something like the milkman and gets nastily done away with. We won't say how, in case that spoils things.
Yeah, when it's a very well written, isn't it, by Huck when he comes to his fate. The last line of that opening salvo is, Shugie McPherson declared never to drink again. You know, it's a very sort of bittersweet line, isn't it?
Yeah, I thought he was quite a nice sort of character. I think there could be more development there.
That's the thing. I think Huck writes these characters. He does layer them very well. I mean, we only meet that Shugie McPherson for a few brief moments, don't we? But you do get a good sort of overall look at his character.
There's a few sort of sergeants in this who, you know, the one who drops the tea later in the book and helps the doctor. He's not ending for like a scene or two, but he's so well written, but you're with him for the whole sort of 5 minute scene he's in.
Yeah, I've had a look at some of the characters. We've got some names like Sir Charles Grover, Professor Whittaker, Butler, played by Martin Jarvis, who reads the audiobook we'll speak about later. General Finch, played in the TV version by John Bennett, who went on to play Lee Sen Cheng in The Talons of Wang Chiang. Of the Earth, the people who want to leave Earth, sort of allegedly, you find out why or why not in the book. We have Carmen Silvera, who played Rene's wife in Allo Allo in the 1980s. So it had quite a strong cast. How do you feel those central characters come across? There's quite a few of them, Al, but they all seem to get their moment in this novelisation, don't they?
Yeah, most definitely. Nobody's sort of left out, even in it for a couple of minutes. Yeah, I think Whittaker comes over quite nastily, you know, sort of. But I think every character has its place, and that's the great thing of the third Doctor when he moved it to the whole Unit Earth thing. Everybody sort of became in place.
Yeah, I mean, on to Professor Whittaker, another one on this seeming conveyor belt of Doctor Who support actors in the 1970s. It was Professor Whittaker was actually played by Peter Miles, who went on to very famously be Nida in Genesis of the Daleks. And he's going to be at Regenerations next month as well, Al. He's still well going into his 80s.
Well, good. That'd be interesting to hear from him. It's like, you know, they worked out what these actors were good and got good roles, like it always was in TV back then. And I think the way that, you know, the characters are really good in the book as well. You can feel there's sort of villains and heroes in this book, definitely.
Sorry,
yeah, I think Captain Yates sort of falls into the middle.
Yeah, he has the shades of grey, doesn't he? Because we get a little bit more backstory, I think. I'm not sure if it's in the TV version. To say he's been very psychologically affected by the events of the Green Death. Yes, we get the events of the Green Death referred to, the Brigadier mentioning the large maggots and how Mike Yates had to take leave after that adventure. And
I really like that about the book, because I've only sort of seen the Green Death once, and I knew there was connections with it to this one, but I liked how they connected it really well.
Yes, and yeah, to see Mike having those shades of grey, it did continue through the Pertwee era. We saw him turn up again, didn't we? As a Buddhist in Planet of the Spiders, John Pertwee's last story. How do you feel his development goes within this story, Al?
I think it goes really well because, you know, everybody thinks he's the nice Captain Yates, and there's that sort of great scene when the Doctor first meets him, you know, in this book, when after the events of the Green Death, and he's very kind to him, what underneath Mike sort of plotting his downfall.
It's a sort of bittersweet end for his character. You really want Unit to stay together as a team, don't you? And it unravels, sadly, in such a dramatic way, but it, you know, it obviously helps the drama of the story.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. The drama keeps going for the whole of this book. You're not going to be disappointed in that factor.
Yes, other characters who are expanded on in the book, you don't find out in the TV show. Martin Jarvis, I think, plays it sort of very authoritarian and straight as Butler in the TV version, but he is a little bit more layered in this book. He's seen as having a scar, isn't he? And Sarah Jane sort of questions him on that.
Yeah, so I can't remember. Do they mention why he has got the scar in the TV episode?
I don't think he doesn't.
No,
actually,
I was trying to think when listening to it. Did they actually mention it?
No, he doesn't actually have the scar because Martin Jarvis is fresh faced in the TV episode.
Yeah.
So him and Whittaker in the book are a lot more volatile towards each other. There's a little bit of tension between him and Peter Miles, Whittaker in the TV show. But it's not as volatile as in this book. You know, it's very argumentative and authoritarian. There's a great battle between them, isn't there, really, in the narrative?
Oh, most definitely. You can tell Butler really doesn't like Whittaker, and they're about the same. You know, it's a sort of hierarchy definitely there.
Yes, and Butler also has those shades of grey, doesn't he? Because you get a little bit of backstory saying how he was a fireman who rescued a child from a burning building.
And that's what changes sort of Sarah's opinion of him, because, you know, Sarah thinks he's just that evil henchman, and he says that, and he's like, oh, I'm so sorry, and sort of, you know, he's not interested.
Yes, indeed, that's quite a bit about the characters now. I'll all sort of back to Sarah Jane. This is only her second story, I think. Would you classify her as a companion yet? Sorry, in The Time Warrior, her original appearance, she sneaks into the TARDIS by mistake, and this is her first trip back to Earth, albeit a very altered Earth from when she left.
There's bits of it there, because of Sarah Jane being such a good character. I think there's the sort of banter between her and the Doctor. It's not the sort of argumentative sort of style I used to have with him and Joe Grant. You know, it's sort of, I can see you're on the same level as me.
Yeah, she's very, very strong and rounded, isn't she? I mean, her development in this era and with Tom Baker comes from basically the travelling to other worlds, doesn't it? But, you know, she's very young, around about 23, I think the fans have worked out from her birth date in the Sarah Jane Adventures later on. But, yeah, she's very well rounded and obviously a very strong character who's made it to be a journalist by the age of 23.
I just think, you know, she's very strong from the beginning, but there are little bits of screaming. Well, not enough to annoy you, I don't think.
No, that's very true, yeah. She's very, 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 very young, I say very 100 times. Very brave. Yeah, and how do you feel the character, Pertwee's Doctor, comes across in this book, Al?
I think by this book, because we must be about near the end of Pertwee time, aren't we, with this book?
It's the very start. It's the second story of his last season, I believe.
That's what I thought it was when I was reading it. And you can tell what Pertwee knows his Doctor. You know, it's all his sort of foibles and the whole thing. The book is full of, you know, the thing, the Aikido and the karate and all the bits John Pertwee made his Doctor.
Brigadier, of course, a bit of a side act in this one, really, isn't he? You know, he's not as central as he is in other books, I don't think.
He's there, but he's not as forceful and direct. He's just, well, the great thing about Nick Courtney, he could be on scene and still make the scene his. So I think that comes over in the book.
There's a wonderful standoff, isn't there, between him and Butler. General Finch. The Brigadier's starting to get an idea of what's going on, so he wants to side with the Doctor, and he basically won't stand aside to let Finch take the Doctor away and kill him, I'd imagine.
Is that the bit with the machine gun?
Yes, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, when he goes, well, we've got a machine gun.
Indeed.
Yes.
Indeed, good old Nick, yes. Wonderful.
Oh, the man was a legend.
Splendid fellow, all of him. Yes, indeed.
Yes.
Okay, Al, I'm back to some themes of the book. Themes I wrote down were sort of Armageddon.
Oh, most definitely. I thought, you know, the whole environmentalism was coming out again.
There's that 70s theme running through, you know, from when Barry Letts was producer. He was a Buddhist himself, wasn't he? A big environmentalist.
There's the whole, you know, fact, if we take a world and then turn it into our own thing, will it be any better than the world we're on sort of outlook?
Yes, and Terence Dix and Malcolm Huck were good old mates, apparently. So, yeah, that was definitely a theme that ran through the whole Pertwee era, didn't it?
Most definitely, you know, with other things like, you know, oil and coal and all sort of fossil fuels that weren't good for us. And this has got lots of stuff about, you know, environmentalism and that all the way through it.
Yeah, and then there's the use of propaganda films, isn't there, to tell people what could occur on this new Earth.
Yeah, in the room they put Sarah into. I can't remember what it's called now.
Yeah, that sort of mass manipulation. It's meant to be a space station. There's a big reveal at the end we won't give away, but it's meant to be meant to be a spacecraft, isn't it? Indeedy. One thing I noticed, Al, about the language in this book. There's the Doctor mentions at one point about time travel and how.
I was going to mention that. It's very, very scientific.
Yeah, well, not so much scientific. The moment I chose, but he mentions to Sarah, time can be backwards and forwards or go around in circles.
I thought it could get a little bit dry sometimes. That was my niggle about the book.
The line that I just mentioned, is that sort of more, I would say, grown-up way of saying wibbly-wobbly, timey-wimey? I mean, does that worry you?
I have to admit, when I heard that in the book, I thought, that's tiny-weeny.
Yeah, I've never really had a problem with sort of the newer Doctors using that phrase, but it...
I love it. I love tiny, weeny, wobbly, daily. Anything like that. It's just fun language.
Or is it a little bit infantile, though? I mean, Doctor Who's a family show, you know. Couldn't we just say it went round in circles? Time is like a ball of string. That's fair enough. That's a good analogy.
Yeah, you say that, and people get into string theory and Schrodinger's cat and all sort of stuff what fries people's brains. When you can just go, oh, it's tiny, weeny, wobbly, wobbly. You know, people sort of
wibbly, wobbly, timey, wimey.
I do agree. The book does go into a lot of theory on time scoops and you know, theoretical time, and he gets out Blackboard to try and explain to Sarah the whole sort of theory of time going in different directions.
Some of the changes to the book, we've had the Shuggy McPherson introduction, and we the Scotsman travelling to London.
That should have been in the programme, it's great.
That would have been nice, yeah, there's just a few shots of people sort of scavengers running around London as now in the TV
version. We've had 28 Days Later, which is probably the closest thing I can think of to this.
Yes, I read a forum online and a gentleman's girlfriend had... was very impressed, apparently. A younger lady was very impressed with the opening, saying, oh, this is like 28 Days Later. So that shows that some of those scenes stood up really well, you know, back from over 40 years ago now.
I'd love to know how you got London without anybody around back then.
I think they just go for very early Sunday morning filming. That's what they do.
That's what they did, though.
That's what they did. They definitely did that with
28 Days Later.
Yeah, they definitely did that with 28 Days Later on a nice summer. I think it was a June morning back in 2001 or two, whenever it was. And I'm guessing they did the same thing here for Invasion of the Dinosaurs.
I just think it really is a great idea, because London's never, never, ever quiet.
No, and it's wonderfully eerie to see it, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just great. Whenever you see London with nobody there, it just looks great.
The other occasion of that we saw controversially was the most recent series of Top Gear, when Matt LeBlanc was being driven around London. That was very...
I still haven't seen that episode yet, I know what you mean.
Yeah, that was very early on a Sunday morning, and he was pulling donuts by the cenotaph, and there was a lot of tabloid controversy about that.
So, back to the book.
Yeah, back to the book again. Top Gear podcast next time, guys. Okay, changes. The Doctor explores London on a motorbike, not the Whomobile. Apparently Malcolm Hulk really didn't like the idea of the Whomobile. And
do you actually like the Whomobile? Because I think it's a bit rubbish.
Yes, I'm not hugely keen myself, you know. I don't think Pertwee really need it. He had that, it was part of his need to be the action man, I think, wasn't it? He suggested it. He ended up keeping it afterwards. Yeah, the whole Bond thing going on. Hulk fleshes out the motivations of the characters. We've said that already. We've spoken about how layered they are in terms of the tension between Butler and Whittaker, and Butler's acquisition of a scar, isn't it, and how it came about, yeah. You know, rescuing a child. There's also a bit of campness put in this book, isn't it? Is it Butler who seems to find the Doctor quite attractive?
Oh, really? I must have missed that bit. What was it
saying? When the Doctor first goes down to the underground lair... spoilery.
They sort of send a pterodactyl off after him.
Yes, and Mr. Jarvis camps up his voice slightly, saying, oh, isn't he a handsome man? And there's a little bit of that there. Yeah. So that isn't necessary in the TV show, but, you know, it's all good. Interesting quotes from me. Back to the empty London again. Sarah talks about vandalism, and the Doctor corrects her by saying, I wish people would stop saying that. The Vandals were such good chaps.
Oh, yeah, that's funny. That's good. You probably met them.
Yes. As you've seen many times in the series, he's met many historical figures. The line about Great Britain always closing on a Sunday as well.
Oh, yeah, and also...
I remember those days. I don't know if you do, Al, but I remember those days.
I do remember. I am old enough to remember. The great bit about how she feels quite comfortable about seeing a Woolworths.
Yes.
Smiling when I read that, when the topic went, Woolworths?
Perhaps she was a little too young. She wasn't around London for the Autons then. I think she would have been a bit scared by them then in the earlier story.
This is Alex Gibbon's Doctor Who News Round.
Hello, this is the Who's News Round on the 26th of August 2016. Fan excitement reached high levels last weekend when an animated clip from the very first Patrick Troughton story, Power of the Daleks, appeared online. Unfortunately, there's been no official confirmation of its source, leading to fans wondering if a full animated release is coming. The story will be 50 years old in October. We can hope that the missing episodes have been found. What's this space? Just out yesterday at bigfinish.com is The New Adventures of Professor Benwith Somerfield, The Unbound World. This stars David Warner and a mysterious new actor playing the Master, known as Sam Kindis. I'll let you all work out whose anagram that is.
Yeah, there's quite a few different editions of this book. I'll probably add in what they are later, Al.
Yeah.
First one published in 1976, I believe. Seen as a classic Doctor Who cover. Orange background, the London skyline.
That's the one I really like. Is that the one with the T-Rex on?
Yes, T-Rex and a pterodactyl, and the very, very famous in Whovian, in fandom terms, the clack noise.
Who did that?
That was Chris Achilleos. That was the great Chris Achilleos. Yeah, great contrast. You have the Doctor as a black and white figure. You have the two dinosaurs in colour, and it's obviously signifying the sunrise, how early, how empty London is in the morning.
It's a great cover.
It is. I think it's one of the top ones I've ever seen, to be honest with you.
It's definitely up there with the other really quite classic one. It just says everything. It's Doctor, this is what you're getting, and it's Dawn.
Definitely. And then we had three more, Al. One, I think, was released around about 1981, a Tyrannosaurus Rex, in front of St. Paul's Cathedral in London, where the Cybermen famously came down the stairs in the invasion. A blue, clear background of London. Again, the Doctor isn't on it. The Pertwee logo, white border with a red word Doctor and a larger Who underneath it, and the dinosaur invasion. It's quite prominent.
Showing my age there, but doesn't that look a little bit like the Tuitt's advert?
That's it. That's the TV version of this utterly reminds me of the Tuitt's advert. I think it's a generational thing, Al, isn't it? You know?
Do we need to explain what that was?
Tuitt's are a fruity sweet here in the UK. It was a very sort of Ray Harryhausen style 1980s advert for the sweet, wasn't it? With a dinosaur, a dinosaur climbing around London.
Basically eating the whole pack of sweets.
Pretty much, yeah. And Invasion of the Dinosaurs definitely puts you in that frame of mind.
They're good sweets.
Oh, they were. I think they're still going out. You still get them.
It's probably got a different name these days.
Yeah, no, well, Snickers Marathon. Don't get me started. Okay. And we have a 1990s edition, a black border, the McCoy logo. We do get Pertwee's face on an orange background, a Tyrannosaurus Rex. We get a Tyrannosaurus Rex in front of Pertwee, a little blue border behind them. Quite an interesting one, but not really on a par at all with the original version.
I think the first one is definitely the best one.
Yes, the Americans got a version. A blue background, as we saw on the American version of the Talons of Weng Chiang, a very sort of oriental-looking font of Doctor Who. Yes, a green Tyrannosaurus Rex, a spaceship seemingly taken off for the moon, or perhaps a version of New Earth, in front of a desolate landscape in front of the Houses of Parliament and Big Ben. Not a bad one, you know, but I think they
I say that's better than the rest, but I still think the first one's the best one.
Yeah, so we had the 1976 edition, gets the thumbs up from us.
Really, all this stars are normally brilliant. I do like that one.
And we have, that was a 78 edition, the second edition, with the Tyrannosaurus Rex in front of St. Paul's Cathedral. Yes. We had a 1992 edition, was the orange background, and the Pinnacle USA edition was one with a blue background. Yeah, so
Definitely the first one.
Yes, Achilleos has got it down to a T. Brilliant. One of the best covers I think we've seen.
So, Mike, the audiobook of The Dinosaur Invasion, read by the ex-Martin Jarvis, what did you think of it?
Very good, Al. Really heightened the story for me. A great combination with the superb narrative of Malcolm Hulk. The soundscape was very good again. I love the use of the propaganda films, the audio of them throughout the whole novelisation. Yeah, very dramatic. Martin Jarvis has a very calming voice at times, but he can also sort of turn it up to the more dramatic moments, can't he? Really create some tension in there for you.
I will agree on that. I thought it was absolutely excellently read. I'm a very, very big fan of Martin Jarvis when it comes to audiobooks. He just knows, I think he's done so many over the years, he knows exactly what to do, and he never puts a foot wrong, in my opinion. They are just brilliantly read, like this one is. There's tension when you need it, there's good female voices. He might have not got the Doctor's exactly right, because he's always a bit complicated, but he gets good separation between, you know, important people and lower class people, and sort of he gets the right sort of scales. You know the differences, I think.
Class based thing, isn't it? He gets the whole broad range of not necessarily accents, but just performances right, doesn't he?
Definitely.
He's got a wonderful voice. I think for me the narrative is so good that you don't actually notice any sort of discrepancies in the voice as we have before. Perhaps.
Really?
Would you agree with that?
I thought he got Sarah's pretty good. Well, I wasn't too sure on John Pertwee's.
Yes, I think there's just so much fleshing out in this book. It's so wonderfully written that I just think he reels you in with it. He takes the narrative and just...
Oh, most definitely. Most definitely. You're there.
Adds a little something to it.
Definitely, just... definitely. He's it's sort of first thing you can just listen to for an hour. I did listen to it quite quickly.
Yeah, so another thorough enjoyment of an audio performance by Martin Jarvis. Looking forward to reviewing some more that he's read in the past, Al, I think.
Oh, definitely, definitely. Anything with Martin Jarvis is good for me.
Shall we round up on... Sorry, Al, shall we talk about our final scores, our final thoughts on the book and our overall scores? You go first, mate.
Okie dokie. Well, I thought it's a very well written book. It has an interesting slant on the monster idea, because though we have sort of big, flesh-eating dinosaurs, they're not really the most essential part of the book. They're sort of a subplot that work really well as well. And then you have all the sort of stuff to do with environmentalism and dystopia doing on. I think it just works so well. The plot doesn't feel plodding. It's got a good pace of every chapter has a good slug of action in it, and you're well into it, and it moves on. So it has a good pace. So I think I give the book a probably an 8, and because it's Martin Jarvis, I'd probably give the audiobook a 10.
Brilliant, Al. Very, very, very generous and good scores there. Similar for me, really. I just thoroughly enjoyed it. Thoroughly engrosses you. The audio performance is excellent. Hulk just really fleshes out these characters. I've got to say, I think he's probably become one of my favourite Target authors straight away. I would go pretty similar score to you, Al. I might give the book an 8.5. Ooh. But it's a definite 10, 11, 12 top score, whichever top score we can give for the audiobook, which is, of course, a 10 as well. So, yeah, did really, really, I know we're saying this a lot, but really enjoyed this one. Superb story.
So far, we haven't found one we're not that keen on. It will happen.
The day is coming, folks.
It will happen when we can just go on a moan for a whole 30 minutes.
Next time, Doctor Who Target Files will be discussing Doctor Who and the State of Decay, written by Terence Dix, along with the audiobook releases, read by Tom Baker, Jeffrey Beavers, and featuring John Leeson. Doctor Who Target Files Dinosaur Invasion Review featured Alexander Gibbons and Michael Winks. I Am the Doctor, composed by Murray Gold. Version for this podcast by YouTube user GruelingTerror42. Newsround opening and closing themes composed by John Baker and by Ted Heath and his orchestra. No copyright infringement intended. Doctor Who Target Files, The Dinosaur Invasion Review, was recorded in Swansea, South Wales and Exeter, Devon during August 2016.